For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
It's so damn hot. Milk was a bad choice.
Well, you heard Dave Murray's forecast from a couple of minutes ago. We thought we'd inflict more pain on people, reminding them how damn hot it's going to be this weekend. Hi, Dave. How are you?
I love that. Milk is always a good choice.
I think so, too. Fred and I both are on that team milk side,
right?
Oh,
yeah, we are.
We love milk. But I would make the case that as hot as it's been here the last few days, it has not been quite as sticky as a few weeks ago. And when the sun goes down, it's not completely uncomfortable. Although I felt like that was ramping up a bit here in the last 12 hours or so.
You're also getting used to it.
Maybe that's it.
That's probably the biggest feature, because it has been humid. It hasn't been dew points in the mid-70s, but dew points have been around 70. You feel that.
But there's a little difference between, 68, 69, and then 76, 77 dew points.
Yes, there is.
You do feel the difference.
Although, absolutely.
Okay, but we can all agree, look, it's a great weekend for the Lake of the Ozarks, if you're going out to Innsbruck or pools. But when will we get relief, Dave? Let's talk about relief.
Okay, well, first of all, tomorrow's an instant replay. It's a little better Sunday.
Okay.
It's a little better on Monday, but we're talking 94 on Sunday, but a little drier air. 91 on Monday, a little drier air. That will feel good.
Yeah.
Then it's all back again Tuesday, Wednesday, and into Thursday. Hot and humid, pure summertime. There should be a little stronger cool front coming through on Friday, Thursday night, Friday of next week. That's a long way off. That should cool us down a little bit Friday and into the weekend. And there's big signs of a major cool down coming about the third week of September.
It's amazing because I feel like most of the summer we were talking, and I will always emphasize the fact, and I have this little, my own little rain gauge is the Common Ground in my neighborhood, which has stayed green the entire summer until the last 2 weeks. And I even have a portion on my lawn. As much as I'm watering it, the sun just pounds it, and it just absorbs all the water. So we've gone from a very, my wife hates the word moist, and I don't know why I'm thinking of that word, but it was a sort of rainy summer, and now we're back to drought conditions, right?
Yes. There'd been enough rain for most of the summer where things were looking pretty good, all the vegetation looking good. But this has been a dry stretch. We haven't seen the thunderstorms pop because of the sinking motion of high pressure. So, this is probably the driest stretch that we've seen.
Yeah, I think so.
And do I think that's going to continue? No, I think as we start to cool down, we'll start to kick a little rain up.
Well, I hope so, because I've got a mystery at my house where I'm using 30,000 gallons more of water than I did last August. And it's inexplicable at this point. But part
of it
is related to my irrigation system. They came over and checked it today. Yeah, it's not only weird, it's very expensive, Dave.
Yes, it is.
You might do a GoFundMe for Mark's water bill. So I feel like I'm watering a golf course at my house or something like that.
Do you think you have a leak somewhere?
Well, that's what they were checking on today. And it was eye-popping when I saw the number. I mean, none of that makes sense. My daughter takes long showers, but I don't think 30,000 more gallons is really possible. Dave Murray, have a great Labor Day weekend. We appreciate the forecast. All right. I like 91 for Monday, Fred. That's not too bad.
Yeah, that's
right?
Good. I'm still trying to figure out when I'm going to cut the grass. Maybe Sunday.
Well, because the other thing about it is it's so funny because I was in a period up until 3 weeks ago where, you would probably, I could make a case because I don't cut my grass real short. The kid that cuts it, we don't cut it super short because you're not supposed to, but you don't have to cut it now. Now it's not growing.
Yeah.
It was always needing to be cut, and now that's really slowed down.
I'm on day 10.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Now, do you have this, you know what I struggle with, and it's terrible, is the nut grass, the long grass?
I have every variety.
Of weeds and
every
stuff?
Every variety of grass in our yard.
So, yeah. But the nut, you know what I'm talking about,
the long grass?
I hate that stuff, and for whatever reason, not every house on the block gets it, but I just every July and August, and it was later this year because I think of the, you know, the weather that we had in June and July, but then it kicked in. And with that stuff, there's no pre-emergent, right?
Nutgrass is the long,
yeah,
the long
so,
green.
So you
one.
Can't kill that with fertilizer or anything or weed killer until it comes up, and then it comes through, and then you can kill it. And they did that, like my lawn company did that, True Green, a couple weeks ago, but now there's more. And I hate that stuff. I don't like it at all. So now my grass, which looked, you know, I would always say like top 10 in the neighborhood maybe for a while. I don't think I'm cracking the top 10, Fred.
I have one of those burn spots too in our front yard.
I have fallen out of the top 10 in the way, especially my backyard looks terrible now. All right. Well, the big story of the day, and look, I felt this on Monday. I could hear it in the judge's voice that this was a jury in Plymouth, Massachusetts, Lindsey Clancy's murder trial. Just devastating details of this that emerged in the last 7 weeks. The death of Cora, who is only 5 years old, Dawson, 3, and then Callan, 8 months old. And it seems, Fred, like what we had today is we had one juror the last couple of days that simply would not go with the 11 others. And what, you know, Kevin Reddington, the defense attorney, says is that he had victory with those 11 jurors. He felt like the guy that was holding out, and he kind of called him out a little bit, was the problem here. He felt like he had won his case if it wasn't for that one juror. Now, the prosecution came out, and they did some news conferences as well. They look like they're going to move forward to try to do this case again. But I've said this multiple times, this jury's gone through a lot, and the judge made that very well known to them. He even wanted to thank them in person today because of their service to the court. But you've got a little bit more audio that kind of emerged from this afternoon, right?
Yeah, we've got some new stuff from reporters that were in the courtroom when the jury was finding out it was declared a mistrial. So that's really interesting. And some sound of the defense attorney, Reddington, ripping on the juror, and Jonathan Turley saying he can't believe that he did that.
Yeah, so I was kind of surprised by that, too, because he was really, really forceful in condemning, the one guy that wouldn't go with the rest of the jury. I think it's this cut here.
Whether or not they could agree is one thing. Obviously, if we didn't have that one individual, we would have had a verdict and we would be out of here. But I don't know if we will ever be able to get jurors that aren't aware of this case anywhere. New York, Washington, Georgia, Japan, India, I don't know.
All right, so this is where he kind of goes after the one juror. And this was a little surprising. I've seen a lot of reaction, post-trial reaction from attorneys over the years, but this was unique, I think.
They know that they were robbed by one man for whatever his agenda was, who stole 7 weeks of the life of these other jurors that were so attentive, so beautiful, so wonderful. And listen to this evidence. And you could see how defeated they were sitting there. And I got a funny feeling that they would have gone on for another week if they had to. So I hope that guy can sleep well at night.
Yeah, that was a shocking comment. You mentioned Jonathan Turley.
I thought it was outrageous and reckless. That was, in my view, a remarkably dangerous thing that Reddington just did. In a society, in an age of rage, he went off on this juror and said that he had stolen the trial and that he had destroyed this otherwise pristine effort, and he couldn't understand why he did it. That juror's name could very well come out with all these internet sleuths. He just put a target on him with those types of statements. And I'm sorry, I found it was really offensive. As lawyers, we have to try to reduce the rage. We have to remind people that those people within our legal system are doing a job, a sacred job. And that includes a holdout juror who's standing not just against a jury, but in this case, seemingly against the world.
I can't agree more with Jonathan Turley. I mean, that's outrageous. I said from the beginning on this, Fred, a couple of different things. One, I always like to defer to the jury because, look, they sat there, they saw the evidence week after week. We did not do that. We didn't see every piece of evidence. They had to see things, witness things, hear things that the rest of the world and the rest of the media did not hear. It is odd to me that, Lindsey Clancy has been held up as some sort of hero by a certain amount of people on the left. It's just bizarre. I have, as you know, Fred, offered a lot of empathy for the postpartum depression aspect of this, for the possibility of psychosis, which Kevin Reddington thinks that he proved that aspect of psychosis. So where this goes next, I don't know. And I do think there, I think Phil commented on this as well. Can you move forward if you're the prosecution here? If you're the prosecutor, the DA, Tim Cruz, who is not someone that Kevin Reddington is a fan of, he made his own statement today. It was the ADA, Jennifer Sprague, who pretty much tried the case in that courtroom. They want to go at it again. But do you do that if you know that 11 members were against you? Or do you say, okay, let's cut a deal here and make sure that this woman is in a facility for the rest of her life, for the majority of her life, and then move forward? If you have to put, you know, 18 more people through this because you had 12 people on the jury and then you had the six alternates as well. And again, the other thing is like if you had that one juror replaced, Phil addressed this and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, you'd have to start all over with deliberations. So the alternates are there in the courtroom for every minute of the trial until the jury goes into deliberations. And I think I heard them say that they were still in the courthouse, which that in and of itself is kind of weird to me. But if they would have had to have called back one of those jurors, they would have had to start from scratch. Now, Reddington, you heard his comments there. He felt like he had the jury in his pocket and he felt like they were ready to go until whenever they had to turn the verdict in that they felt. But you got people out there. This is where it's dangerous, Fred. You know this. You got people out there who are heralding this juror as a hero, as like the only guy that's standing up for justice. You have people on the other side that are holding up, you know, Lisa Clancy, or not Lisa Clancy, I've made that mistake before, Lindsay Clancy, as some sort of hero here in what she's done. Kevin Reddington said she was a great person, a great mom, and some of that stuff might be true, but she also methodically planned her three children's death and strangled them over the course of many minutes.
You have a piece of sound from the DA. I think it's the third piece of sound you had. He was asked, were you being insensitive to Lindsay Clancy?
Yeah, let me see if I can find that particular cut. So who, the DA was asked that question?
So it's DA number three.
Okay, and I'm sorry. There's a bunch of stuff in here that is not something that I can find right away. Here we go.
Insensitive is killing three children. Insensitive is ignoring those facts. We have an obligation to stand up for those people and seek justice and make sure the defendant gets justice and make sure they get justice. So if people can't understand that, I don't know how I can answer that question.
I mean, that's a valid point. Insensitive to Lindsay Clancy, no matter what you want to be sensitive or insensitive to, you have to remember the victims here. And I think that's what that prosecutor and DA were trying to do. I'm really surprised by what Reddington did, too. And I'm glad that Jonathan Turley called him out. And I would hope, because that guy, I think all the jurors are going to be targeted. If it gets out who these people are, and they're probably going to be smarter to not talk to the media. If they do talk to the media, you'll know who they are. They'll be targeted. I mean, the behavior on X right now, and I would say this is true on both sides, is reprehensible. I mean, for a moment, let's think about these kids and the kids who lost their lives and, you know, not go back and forth on one juror or 11 jurors or anything like that. I don't think that we'll ever have justice in this case, unfortunately, because of the division and the split, you know, just in the reaction to this particular case. But it is one of the more tragic cases that I think we've all been familiar with. And it's just horrible what happened to these children. And, you know, I don't, no matter what the mental condition, the future mental condition of Lindsay Clancy might be, you know, one thing that I did hear in the prosecution's favor is that, you know, the time at which she spent methodically planning this for someone who claims it was a psychosis doesn't really match up with the timetable. I have issues with that as well, which is maybe what this juror was focusing on in not acquitting or finding guilty by reason of insanity. We're going to lighten things up. We got Sue's News. She's not here. Ethan handling that chore coming up next.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't. And you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Paul Hall coming up with some entertainment recommendations. We got Frank Cusimano as well, but ladies and gentlemen, even though Sue Thomas is not here, we still got to do this.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News.
brought to you by Sue.
As difficult as it is sometimes without her, the show must go on.
It must.
Sue's News must continue, especially on a Friday. It doesn't feel like Friday on the Mark Rudin Show.
We need some lighter content
that
here.
We do. Yeah, Paul Hall, Frank DiSimone also coming up on the other side of the hour. Happy National Lazy Moms Day. Dang it, I need the bell.
Is that possible?
Need the bell. Ding, ding, ding.
Hit the bell there, Fred.
Thank you. During the first Friday in September, National Lazy Moms Day, delegates everyday mom jobs to someone else. Busy moms know that the work of being a parent is never done. However, occasionally, parents need a recharge. You know what this sounds like to me? It sounds like Mother's Day Part 2. Which, listen, I'm not saying moms out there don't deserve two Mother's Days. I'm just saying that's what it sounds like.
I'm going to be particularly cautious in this area of the law.
Yeah, you have any thoughts on this, Mark? You have anything you want to break down, analyze?
I'm going to do exactly what I said I wasn't going to do. How did you start that story? Explain exactly how you started it. You said what?
I said, happy National Lazy Moms
Day. Okay, because...
And then I said, during the first Friday in September, National Lazy Moms Day delegates everyday mom jobs.
Everyday mom jobs.
And
everyday mom jobs. What are those? Because I got a lot of everyday jobs as a dad. That's why I'm throwing the red flag on that one.
Dishes?
I do the dishes.
Okay, Mark
does
the
laundry.
Dishes. Mark does the laundry.
I fold the laundry. I'm not saying my wife doesn't do anything, but let's face it, Fred, I barely work for a living, so I have all this time at home to do this. But I do a lot of these things. I clean the house. You come over tomorrow morning, you'll see me jamming on some music and cleaning the floors in my house.
Mark Reardon.
So what are these everyday tasks that I'm not doing?
All the things that apparently you're doing.
Yeah.
That's what I'm telling you. Mom of the house. How about that?
We should recognize you then.
Thank you, Fred.
Okay.
Thank you for doing that. Sorry, Fred's the Hall of Famer.
So we know that Monday we're all going to be off for the holiday, Labor Day. And in general, Americans put in more hours at work than people in most other countries. The average...
Except me.
You are the outlier in this equation. The average in the U.S. is around 1,800 hours. Is that per year? That's more than people in Canada, Australia, Japan, the UK, but it's actually less than people in Mexico, Chile, Korea. But which state works the hardest? Any guesses? Anyone?
Vegas or Nevada.
Ooh, I like that one, Fred.
You
that's
know,
good.
That's actually kind of funny. Vegas is fifth least hardworking
what?
State in the
You mean Nevada. That makes
Nevada,
no sense.
Yeah, Nevada is.
These things are so dumb, though.
An annual study ranked all 50 states based on things like employment rates, hours worked, average commute, and how much time, free time people have in general. I guess it does make sense. There's probably a lot of free time, I imagine, in Nevada because of Vegas, right? You would think.
People that are working down on the street, I mean, there's a lot of people that are working to keep casinos moving and cleaning the rooms and all that. That's why it surprises me.
The hardest working state in the United States of America is South Dakota, followed by North Dakota.
That's why this is so dumb. All right, can you do another story?
Okay,
there's nothing about this
where
that makes any sense whatsoever.
Missouri's at 31. Illinois is at 40. And you know what? The Nevada, you know, theory is just debunked because Hawaii's fourth on the list. And you would think that would be like the least hardworking one. So anyway, I don't know, Mark.
It's a list. That's all you need to know.
And I shared the list. That's what we do here on Sue's News. Ethan's News. We share lists. BuzzFeed recently shared another list, Mark. You're going to like this list, though. This is a list of products, trends, inventions that were hyped as the next big thing, but they fizzled out fast, and I have some of the most notorious ones. Have you ever heard of ephemeral tattoos? You ever heard of this?
Mm-mm.
Tattoos that are meant to fade after 9 months or so. The trend was supposed to be huge and never became, and I understand why that you would think that would be a big thing. I mean, inking yourself is a pretty big commitment, and they don't always age super well. 3D movies are another one. Mark, I imagine being in the business.
I would put 3D movies in that, yeah, because everybody thought...
What didn't work?
Well, I think what didn't work is the experience at home, because they had I even had like a 3D TV at one point, but you had to have the goggles and stuff like that. I don't know. I think the technology just got so good that you didn't really need 3D. They still have some films in 3D that you can, you know, choose that option, but, you know, having all the experience I had with the movie industry, there was a thought that that was going to be more of a thing, and it's gone in the other direction.
Curved TVs also made the list. I don't think we ever had one of those in my home. Crystal Pepsi. I know you're a Diet Coke guy, so maybe that doesn't play for you.
Remember that
I've
one,
never
Fred?
Even heard
I remember
of Crystal
that.
Pepsi.
I remember hearing that name. Yeah.
You guys remember hoverboards?
Of course.
Like 10 years ago, when everyone was riding the hoverboards. Oh my gosh! All my friends had them. That was like the coolest thing.
Doctors love those things because the kids would come in with broken bones.
Have you ever seen a coworker retiring? Ask them, "What are you doing next?" And they responded by saying, "I'm going to Disney World," like they had just won the Super Bowl. An annual study analyzed over 180 of the biggest cities in the U.S. to determine the best places to retire. They considered a bunch of different metrics: affordability, activities, golf is one of those activities, Mark, quality of life, weather, healthcare. At the end of the day, Orlando, Florida was named as the number one place to retire, not specifically because of Disney, of course. But I guess people just love Florida, and there's a lot to do there. And I know that the Villages is not that far from there as well. A lot of golfing as well. Orlando, Florida at number one. They're followed by Tampa, Scottsdale, Casper, Wyoming, Atlanta, Minneapolis, and Fort Lauderdale. Those are some of the top places in the country.
I love Florida. It's just so hot sometimes.
It does get really hot. Okay, birthdays in on this day in history. Happy birthday to the Queen Bee herself. Beyonce is 45 years old. I'm just being honest. Beyonce doesn't look 45. She doesn't look 45.
No.
Mike Piazza is 58 years old
today.
I'm
guessing Mike Piazza looks 58.
I would probably guess that he does.
68.
I'm going to back you on that one. 54 years ago in 1972 at the Munich Olympics, Mark Spitz became the first Olympian to ever win 7 gold medals. His 7th was for the 400-meter medley swimming relay. And, of course, we know that Michael Phelps would go on to surpass his record with 8 gold medals at the 2008 Beijing Games. Overall, Phelps has 23 gold
medals. That Mark Spitz thing, dude, you weren't alive, but that was a big deal. It was huge.
In 2002, Kelly Clarkson became the first American Idol. In 2006, crocodile hunter Steve Irwin died after his chest was pierced by a stingray's barb. Okay, random fact of the day, time to conclude Ethan's news. Did you know that cockroaches have individual personalities? Although their personalities tend to fall into 2 different categories, shy or bold. I like the shy ones more.
I think I would too. I would vote for shy. Thank you, Ethan. Wrapping up Sue's news on a Friday.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Friday. Cusumano coming up to recap the Mizzou victory last night, talk about the Cardinals and a few other things as well. Paul Hall from Common Guy Films is with us to talk entertainment. I think we would both agree. We don't agree on everything, but I think we would both agree. And Fred, I think you would also agree that maybe in about 8 months, a year's time, we're going to have a documentary on Lindsey Clancy.
No kidding.
3-part, 4-part, because probably several documentaries on this case, if I had to anticipate. How are you this afternoon?
It seems like we'll get like 2 waves of them. You'll get the instant docs, which you'll get soon.
Yeah.
You might even have within a month. And then you'll get the ones that'll hit us in like 3 or 4 years. It'll be all the hairy details down to the bottom, even the things you didn't see here. Maybe good, maybe bad, but probably about 4 or 5 different ones will come forward at that point.
Yeah, and look, I think for the most part, and you've recommended, and I've recommended some of these out there, some of the documentaries even, I finally wrapped up The Pastor's Wife, and I didn't know if that was going to be something I would stick with, but I did, and I thought it was pretty well executed. Now, some of the things that happened in the end and the accusations about how something wrapped up, I don't want to give too much away here, I think was a little off kilter there. But overall, I thought it was a pretty good doc.
Yeah, it was. And it kept your attention. I mean, any good documentary takes a story that we're all interested in and will develop it into something that engages you throughout. Sometimes they come to a conclusion. Sometimes they don't. I prefer the ones that document and don't try to push a side or another. Just give you all the facts and let you decide.
Okay, let me ask you, because I don't know if you talked about this, and Fred, I think that you're going to know this case, and Ethan might know a little bit about this as well. So I think this was on Netflix. I ran across this series. Lindsay Cerniak is involved in this, and it's called Game Day Murders. And these are like 45-minute mini documentaries on things that happen in the sports world that are going to just kind of blow your mind. And the first episode is about this kid who was killed, and he was a big basketball player in the early 2000s for BYU. But the second kid, so first of all, Paul, are you familiar with these series of docs that I'm referring to?
This particular one, no, I'm not, Mark.
Okay, I wasn't either, but here's what's interesting, Fred. And Ethan, I don't know if you know about this. The second episode is about the Mike Danton case. Do you know what Mike Danton's all about? So 3 days after scoring a goal in a playoff game for the St. Louis Blues, he was arrested by FBI agents in a murder-for-hire plot that was crazy. Do you remember this, Fred?
Whoa.
Do you not remember the Mike Danton case?
I forgot about it till now.
Right. So this was in early 2000s, 2004. I wasn't even back in St. Louis at the time. But he was literally arrested during the Blues' first-round playoff series against the Sharks. I have not watched the second episode. So, it's like five different episodes. The first one is on, and again, I might be making a mistake. It might be Baylor. I'd have to look this up. But the second one, for sure, is on the Mike Danton case. And I looked this up, and Fox 2 did a little blurb on this about a month ago, because I think these all came out about a month ago. But I would recommend these because they look very interesting. Okay, that was off the beaten track just a little bit. What else you got for us this weekend?
I haven't seen that, and I'm going to have to check it out now, Mark. But first up, let's go to Apple TV Plus. We have a new movie over there that features some stars that you would think would be in theaters. Ryan Reynolds and Kenneth Branagh in a new film called Mayday.
How good, you have not died.
Who are you? Why am I tied to the bed?
So that you would not move during the surgery.
What do you mean, surgery?
In your leg, I repaired an artery. You screamed a lot, but that is my fault because I do not have proper anesthesia.
We're okay. What is with all the American stuff?
This may shock you. I admire your country very much.
You know, I've seen the trailer for this many times because I've been watching Tehran lately on Apple TV Plus, and it looks rather fun. Although, as you probably know, Ryan Reynolds has drawn attention to this project and himself in a very awkward way in the last couple of days. Did you dial yourself into that controversy?
That, and I thought to myself, was he alive during the 80s?
Yeah, for people,
I don't know what his birthday is.
76. So he was. He was born in 1976, but it's just bizarre. I played the audio earlier. I'm not going to waste my time with it now, but he talked about how the 80s were this, you know, traumatizing period in American culture, and nothing could be further from the truth. So I think he was one of those. Look, Paul, we both interviewed celebrities quite a few times, and sometimes you get a question, and I think he just kind of lost his way on that one. But is the movie any good? That's what I want to know.
The movie has plenty of 80s references, and that's kind of where all of that interview topics generated from. Here he plays a lieutenant who, well, he's going to surveil Russia during the Cold War, and we did that plenty of times, so it's kind of, you could say it's almost based on what went on, but he was in a spy plane. That spy plane, for whatever reason, came down out of the altitude to a point where it could get shot down. He ends up behind enemy lines, captured or taken in by Kenneth Branagh's Nikolai character. Mm. Now, it turns out Nikolai has this really big obsession with everything American, including Top Gun. He said he's worn out two or three copies of watching the movie itself, and he loves American culture, despite being an ex-KGB agent. It's an interesting fish out of water. The two get together, and they've got to get back to America and finding out a little bit about each other's countries along the way.
It's funny. I think I heard, because in some of the comparisons to the 80s, I believe I heard a reference from either Ryan Reynolds or somebody else who was connected with the film to Midnight Run being part of the inspiration, which is one of my favorite movies of the 80s. Charles Grodin and Robert De Niro. It's a fantastic, like, road trip movie. Is there a little Midnight Run aspect in this as well?
There are parodies of, or at least pieces from, a lot of different movies. As you watch this, you'll feel like it's taken from a couple different movies along the way, including that, as well as Top Gun, as well as others. Some of it will feel very familiar to you. In fact, some of the backgrounds here, I had to ask. I had seen the film with my wife, and I said, is that AI, or is that just a classic old put a car in front of a green screen and just transition the backgrounds, kind of like think Seinfeld and the way the cars would move in the background.
Right. And I'm very familiar with that because I just rewatched all of Seinfeld. And yes, it's that fake car looking. They're just sitting in a studio somewhere and you see the traffic, you know, from the rear view window in theory.
Right. Correct. And but this is from the side view and you see the different landscapes pass by as they're traveling. I liked it. Once I got over the fact that it seemed so ridiculous and I couldn't figure out why, if it was meaning to be more funny, more dramatic, it's got a little bit of both, but I liked Mayday. It's maybe not the best film to come around in a while. The two actors are on screen a lot, and it's something definitely to check out over on Apple TV+.
All right. Tell me about The Runner, not to be confused with Runner, which is another project, right?
Yeah, it's funny. The Runner came up. You know, a couple weeks ago, we had this drop where the Statham movie showed up on Prime early, and it wasn't supposed to. Now, when you see The Runner showing up on Prime Video, you say to yourself, are they doing this again, where they dropped something they should have? No, this is a totally different movie. Gal Gadot, as well as Damian Lewis, are here, and it's a story of a runner. She's a lawyer, but she's out for a run when she finds out her son is kidnapped. And she must do whatever the person on the phone tells her to, or her son won't make it. I know. I'm building the tension.
Mm-hmm.
It really is making you want to see Gal Gadot run for the better part of 90 minutes. It is not that deep at all. Somebody compared it to Speed with no bus and just having her run throughout the city. The Runner is on Prime Video. Let's just put it that way.
So we were talking about documentaries, and I remember, I think you and I talked about it during the Olympics, this breakdancing thing with Ray Gun, right? Which was just comedic, and everyone made fun of Ray Gun. So to your point, sometimes these things get flipped very quickly, and we have a Ray Gun documentary, don't we?
Untold. This is the Untold series, which we've seen a lot of these on Netflix.
Which are pretty
good series, the way they come together. Untold, Ray Gun, Breaking Bad tells the story of the lead up to the Olympics. In fact, the Olympics part doesn't show up until about 2/3 of the way into this kind of short documentary. But it leads into a different character than what we all were led to believe after all the takedowns in the meme culture and what her life was before this. Now, some of it is just as comedic as you could imagine. Others makes you feel for her and how she's trying to rehabilitate her life because people had torn her, her life apart.
Well, we all made fun of her quite a bit, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And she thought on the day of, and as you see in this documentary, her and her husband both thought she killed it that day. Well, she killed it, but obviously it became something else. And in fact, that early finding out, that early awareness of what social media did to her is classic in this movie, and it's something that just it kind of makes you break your heart a little bit for how social media can kill
you.
Well,
and that's why I don't know if I want to watch this, because look, it's easy for me and people like me, and we do it on Twitter, to glom onto this stuff, but there are human realities of all this stuff too, and my sense is maybe we're going to feel a little guilty for how we treated Reagan. Quickly, because I got to get to Cusimano here, and we got football to talk about. Chad Powers is back on Hulu for season 2. I really liked season 1. I thought it was light and funny, and I'm excited to see it. Have you seen any of the episodes, Paul?
I've seen about, I've been through about half this season as it is. The thing about it, I like it a lot, all right? I still like it a lot in season 2. However, I'm going to warn you up front, it seems a lot more serious, a lot more dramatic than the funny. The first one kind of skewed more towards the fun and games. This one, not as much, but still a good time. Glenn Powell works. The whole cast works. I love it.
But I say this, sophomore seasons are tough. They really are. A lot of times the third season is a little bit more easy to execute in an effective way. One other thing you wanted to mention is Dolly is everywhere, right? You got 9 to 5 on a bunch of streaming services.
Yeah, last week we talked about how it was nowhere, and then it was up on Prime Video. Now you can get it on almost every service. Hulu, Netflix has it up there, HBO Max. If you want to see 9 to 5 and you have a streaming service, look around. You probably can find it now, even though it wasn't there, unfortunately, a couple weeks ago.
Paul, tell folks where they can find your reviews.
SimpleCommonGuy.com. Mark, here's the gift I got for you. I promised I'd show it to you on camera there.
Oh, where is it? I have to look at the camera. Where is it?
It's the T-shirt.
Oh, it's a Diet Coke T-shirt.
I heart Diet Coke, just for Mark Reardon.
I love that. I love it.
Today.
Thank you very much, Paul Hall. We'll see you next Friday. Oh, I have not broken down my feelings about the Mizzou game last night against Arkansas Pine Bluff. So let's do that with our friend Frank Cusimano from KSDK this afternoon. How are you, Frank?
Be with you, sir. Hope you're doing well.
So I do think that the first half went pretty well. I think I'm with Coach Drink on this. The second half was sloppy, but I will say this about Austin Simmons, even though he settled in. Dude, that second pass he made in the SEC and maybe even against KU is a pick six. He got very lucky that his first, you know, touchdown was not a touchdown for the other team. But the offense settled in nicely. I like the tempo. I like the rhythm. On the other hand, the second half was a mess. Your thoughts?
Okay, well, my takeaway as soon as the first half ends is that the only thing that matters is the performance of Austin Simmons, and he was insanely accurate. I mean, 17 and 19, 252, four touchdowns. Granted, Arkansas Pine Bluff. You got to keep saying that every time you say something nice about Mizzou in the game. But I don't know how you don't love 6'4", 220 with a rocket arm and deadly accurate. I mean, there is a reason why the best quarterback mind in all of college football, Lane Kiffin, recruited him, coached him up, and started him. If he's really good, we got a chance to be special.
Well, look, you know, he loves Caden Lee, who is his teammate down at Ole Miss, and he seems to have, you know, a pretty good little vibe going with the other Mizzou receivers. So I love the way that the offense was working. Do we have any kind of update? An update on Ahmad Hardy coming back, or do we know anything more about that?
I don't think we do. I would be surprised if he played against Kansas. You know, if you're going to hold him out for Kansas in the next week, I think is not a good opponent. Look, if you get him back for the SEC season, he's 100%. That's what you got to do.
One thing I did notice last night, and this is an emphasis that Coach Drink has had, I think they hired a guy from Florida State University, but special teams was just terrible last year, and they cleaned that up quite a bit last night. They looked good.
They did, and it helps that you have your star place kicker back, too, who's capable of, you know, knocking in from 50 to 60 very consistently.
Frank, college football, I've never witnessed a sport be in such a great place while simultaneously being such an absolute freaking mess. And that's where exactly where it feels like college football is right now. You have, I believe this was yesterday that this occurred, where the Alabama judge grants the injunction for the pro players to be able to return
to LSU.
Yeah. And I think it was grants 40 players in total eligibility now that had lost it. I mean, what is the latest update on this? I know that the SEC had their bans on it, but it seems like this is far from over.
It's not. Yeah, I mean, it's there's no question there's still going to be, you know, mass chaos and confusion. The thing about it is that's intriguing. It makes, you know, the biggest villain in college sports, Lane Kiffin, even more of a villain. I mean, think about Dabo Swinney is not exactly lovable. All of America, except people in Louisiana, will be rooting for Clemson tomorrow.
No doubt.
And I'm telling you, it sets up the most intriguing game I can ever remember, regular season-wise, when Lane Kiffin returns to Oxford, Mississippi with LSU. That's going to be unbelievable.
Well, let's talk about the Cardinals. They were not able to close out the sweep of the Dodgers. Riley kind of blew that one in the ninth inning. They head to Colorado. You're seeing a lot of new names on the field, aren't you?
Yeah, and a lot of things you really, really like from those new names. First, Riley O'Brien, really a rough day. It's been a rough month. You know, I don't know if any team in like a 16-game period has had four walk-off losses. I mean, I'm sick of, you know, seeing those cutaways of a dejected Riley O'Brien.
Yeah.
But look, let's face it. He's had a really good year, but I think on a really good team, he's a seventh-inning guy. And maybe it's Gordon Graceffo who's been lights out as the future closer. But, yeah, it's really a brutal loss because you could have swept them. You're headed to Colorado with all this, you know, momentum. But still, for this team to be just a game under 500 in a transition year, I'll take it any day of the week.
Frank, very small sample up to this point from the Cardinals' newest prospect to enter onto the Major League roster in Leonardo Bernal. But I tell you what, I think that we have seen something from him that we didn't see in over two seasons from Jimmy Crooks, and that was immediate comfortability. I know it's only been, you know, what, 13, 14 at-bats, but he just looks so comfortable in the batter's box, and it feels like it's a great sign this early in his career.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I've mentioned it before. Like 3 or 4 years ago, I was on the backfields at Jupiter, and Bernard Gilkey comes up to me and he says, "Watch this kid. He's a switch-hitting catcher who's like our best defensive catcher," and he was like 18 years old at the time. So he's an absolute stud. He's got the best arm. He has the best receiving tools. And he just has a presence. You know, you never see him smile. He's hitting home runs. He's getting key base hits. Yeah, look, the catching position is solved. I know we have Renio Rodriguez. He may be the better hitter of the two. Maybe he comes to the Cardinals eventually as a third baseman or as a DH. But I love the future of Bernal.
All right, what would you say about Hunter Dobbins? Because that was bit of a hit. He had to have Tommy John, right?
Yeah, it's a blow, and I think that, like, heading into spring training next year, he was going to battle for that fifth spot. Hopefully, he comes back in a year and is okay. But they have so many candidates for that spot as we speak. I mean, they got a bunch of guys like, you know, Quinn Matthews, like Tanner Franklin, who can really compete for that spot. So I don't think it's going to be a big blow. It's a shame for the young man, though.
Salo City is trying to keep the point streak alive right now. What are they got happening this weekend?
Well, I think, you know, the big news with them is they have spent, you know, $12 million on Navarro, who is arguably, you know, like a top three goal scorer in the league. And I talked to their sporting director, Corey Ray, yesterday, and I said, "How much convincing did you have to do to ownership to spend that kind of money?" And you know what he said? He goes, "They were pushing me to do it." So apparently the Taylors had decided, hey, let's go for it. I don't know if they can win the whole thing right now, but they are a much more talented team than they were, say, a month ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, considering how everything started, I think it's dramatic improvement. There's no doubt. What's on your show on Sunday night before we let you go?
Well, a lot of Mizzou coverage and the story of a coach at Lindenwood University who was ever so close to dying, had a kidney transplant, and has rebounded and is an absolute joy to be around. And the Lindenwood players swear by him. So it's kind of a heartwarming story on Sunday night.
Awesome. Frank, have a great Labor Day weekend. We'll not talk on Monday, but we'll talk next week.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Awesome.
Thank you.
The voice of Lindenwood sitting in the studio with me right now, Ethan Hanford, right? Call the football. You called the game this week, didn't you, or was it last week?
It was last week. Yeah, okay. I called the home games on 89.1 KCLC.
We're going to take a break here. We'll come back in the 5 o'clock hour. There's a substance out there that I've talked about on the show before. It's called Ibogaine, and the results of some trials and some things that have happened in Mexico with this substance and how it's cured PTSD. The former governor of Texas, Rick Perry, underwent Ibogaine treatment. It's not licensed legally here in this country, but there's a lot of efforts moving in that direction, even some in Missouri. And Jonathan Dickinson is the CEO and the co-founder of Ambiolife Sciences, has written a book called Ibogaine and the Bicameral Mind. I'm really, really open to this particular substance, drug, whatever you want to call it. It's mind-altering, but what it does is has dramatic effects on people, for example, who've gone off to war and have terrible PTSD, also anxiety, depression, issues like that. So it really is something that's very unique, and I like to draw some attention to it because I think it's a wave of the future. Dan Buff is going to be with us as well. I love Dan. He's a good friend. We talked entertainment over the years. He's written a little bit about Dolly Parton recently. He's got some thoughts on movies and TV. It's always a fun conversation. We'll do that as well in the 5 o'clock hour before audio cut of the day.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.